You're listening to a podcast from 702.
702.
Family Matters.
Yeah, we move on. There's so much excellent content today on the show. I wish I had 4 hours for it. But we do have 42 minutes left, you and I, with Jeannie Covey, and we're going to be talking about empathy and the downsides to empathy. Obviously, we'll talk first about what empathy is and why it matters, and it's a beautiful thing in a caring universe. But like any moral emotion that serves an important social and psychological function, we also got to understand when it might actually overreach in some of us. So we talk about empathy for the next 40 minutes or so. Jeannie, good morning.
Good
it's wonderful
morning,
seeing you again.
So nice to be back.
I haven't seen you in months.
I missed you last time.
So sorry, I was absent without leave.
I know, I missed you terribly, but it was wonderful working with Caesar, but I'm glad to be back.
Yeah, he's absolutely stunning. Love his work, love his brain, and his empathy for many people. You know what? This morning, one of the first things I saw on Facebook was from journalist Griselda Lewis, who was at the SABC, and she had this as her status update yesterday. I have a terrible habit of harboring people's problems. Mm-hmm. When you tell me something sad, I literally feel your pain. Mm-hmm. Is there any way I can stop? It now gets to the point of crippling me. And there's a long discussion on a wall. And some people praised her and said, but this is Ubuntu on flick, basically. You should be so happy. But as I was thinking about the conversation we're going to have and are having right now, I was actually thinking about Griselda, because empathy can be a beautiful thing, but it can also overrun.
100%. That's such a beautiful link that you've made there, Eusebius. I really appreciate it. And it's not a case of too much of a good thing can be bad, not at all. It's just that empathy needs to be balanced with boundaries, and empathy needs to be balanced with appropriate responsibility. Hmm. So like you say, empathy is an incredibly important interactional variable. We need it in the world. Charles Darwin even identified empathy as being an important factor in social evolution. It's why part of why we as a species have gotten as far as we have. But it's incredibly important that empathy be protected, or else it can be exploited. And I noticed that such a significant percentage of my clients have got very, very, very high levels of empathy. It's very rare, usually only in the context of couples therapy, where I'll have somebody with significantly low levels of empathy presenting for therapy. Sometimes, from time to time, they'll present individually. But on the whole, it's all my clients are such wonderful, lovely people that suffer with depression and anxiety. And I call this specifically the downside of empathy, how empathy can actually be linked to depression because of their very high levels of empathy.
What is empathy? Because there are many other emotions that are adjacent to it that are equally important in our psychological lives as social beings. What is the best way we can explain what we're trying to pick out when we talk about empathy?
Okay, so it's a beautiful question. First and foremost, empathy is not actually an emotion.
Okay.
Empathy is a perceptual experience where you can accurately perceive the internal frame of reference of another person.
Mm.
So if I ask any client, they usually say, well, sympathy is when you feel sorry for someone, and empathy is when you put yourself in their shoes. But actually, compassion is when you feel sorry for someone. Sympathy is when you put yourself in someone else's shoes, how you would feel in that situation. And empathy is when you can accurately perceive how they are feeling in their situation. So it's more of a cognitive experience that can lead to emotional experiences, but it's actually a perceptual experience where you experience perceptually, you can identify what another person is experiencing and what they are going through.
That is the best distinction I've ever heard between empathy and sympathy and, you know, other feelings like being compassionate. So given that perceptual character and the cognitive character of empathy, we'll have enough time to tease out what the dangers are, the downsides of too much empathy, as it were. But first and foremost, if you had to articulate why empathy matters to us in our relationships, in, you know, being part of a moral community of people in society, why is empathy, when it is not overreaching, why is it useful to us?
It's the same as asking, why is it useful to be able to look in a mirror? So how am I likely going to be perceived by other people if I go out the house looking this way, if I try to do my makeup without using a mirror, how accurate will I be? How effective will I be? So we constantly need to check our interpersonal effectiveness by being able to accurately perceive the impact that we're having, and also to be able to predict, if I say a certain thing, I do a certain thing, how is the other person going to be able to respond? Being able to share ideas is what separates us from other species that haven't been able to progress as the human species has. And that's a process called theory of mind that human beings have, and that we develop as we get older. My three-year-old son, like all three-year-olds, he does not yet have theory of mind. Mm-hmm. So he will just cover his eyes and say, you know, mommy, you can't find me, you can't see me. Because he can't see me, so he assumes that I can't see him. And if we interacted this way throughout our lives, we would never be able to share ideas in the way that we do when we have accurate empathy of being able to have theory of mind, of seeing what another person is experiencing and being able to relate to that.
That's really fascinating. And without being too theoretical, we'll move swiftly along after the next point. But you're so lucid, I got to ask you this. Given the different concepts that you have already distinguished, it seems to me that empathy is also perhaps a necessary precondition for sympathy. So if I have an accurate perceptual experience of what it is that you are going through, then I'm in a better position to be able to talk back to you what it is that I'm observing you experiencing. And that's the beginnings of the other person necessarily, not necessarily, but potentially being able to feel that they're being heard or they're being accurately seen. And if I didn't have empathy, I probably would have less of a chance of getting through to you, figuratively speaking.
150%. That's beautifully put. Yesterday, my three-year-old son was looking, and if you ask him, he says he's four, by the way. If he's listening, buddy, you are four. So yesterday he was looking in the tree and he was looking at some bird nests, and he said, I want to take one of those nests. And I said, no, you can't take the bird's nest. He says, but why, mommy? I'm a thief. Well, he said thief, but he meant thief. And I had to say to him, my darling, how would you feel if somebody came and took your house? And then he said, I'd feel very bad. And I said, okay, so then we don't want to make the birdies feel bad. And then we had a whole long discussion about whether birds are animals or reptiles or things. But exactly like you're saying, so he needed that experience of being able to first put himself in that position to be able to then develop the skill, the interactional tool and skill of empathy. So that later in life, he can be more interpersonally effective in sharing his ideas and making his way through the world.
Mm. So let's make our way slowly then towards empaths as a group. Are there some people who have the capacity of empathy in bigger perceptual volumes than the rest of the human population?
Yes, definitely. It's on a continuum. On the very low side of the continuum, we have our favorites, our sociopaths and our narcissists, who have very, very, very low levels of empathy, sometimes insignificant amounts of empathy. And then we've got our empaths on the very high end of the spectrum. And then everybody, like any kind of characteristic, there's a normal distribution curve, and most people fit in on the average of that. So definitely some people have got a musical ability, some people have got a sporting ability, and some people just have a talent for being able to accurately perceive the internal frame of reference for another person.
So how does that typically manifest in my daily experiences?
It typically manifests with very high levels of guilt and anxiety.
Oh, wow.
Very high levels of guilt and anxiety, overthinking, taking on responsibility for how another person might be feeling, and a difficulty with setting effective boundaries, which is, in a nutshell, and we'll unpack it as we go, in a nutshell, why there is a downside to empathy, that empaths suffer greatly. There is a group of monks in Indonesia who actually revere depression as a sign of spiritual enlightenment. In their culture, it's good to be depressed, so they try to be as depressed as possible. Because they say it's a sign of spiritual enlightenment, that when you can actually feel what is really going on in the world, feel the suffering of the world, the only solution is to be depressed. So empaths, they will be driving along the road and they'll see somebody on the side of the road, and for a long time they might be thinking about that person on the side of the road. What is it like for them? And they can accurately imagine what it must be like for them. And then they might have feelings about that. So that feeling about that, that is sympathy, how I feel about your situation. But the empathy leads onto that of what I can imagine you must be feeling. And like I said, empaths also have a very difficult time setting boundaries, and we can unpack that as we go.
That sounds like it can be incredibly, at the level of feeling, draining to be an empath.
It can be incredibly draining. And if you look at people who are psychics, mentalists, and, you know, the accuracy of that is not, you know, up for our discussion. But in my opinion, there are people with incredibly high levels of empathy that can, on a subconscious and unconscious level, perceive things that are being communicated from your central nervous system to mine. And it's like having the radio on, the TV on, and talking on the phone, and having your three-year-old and their friends playing in the background all at once. It can be an overwhelming experience to take all that information in. And then if you are also then feeling about the information that you're taking in, if you're having an emotional experience about it, it can be incredibly draining. And that can often present as depression as well.
28 minutes after 11 o'clock, has Jeannie been describing you? Does it sound like this is a word that finally is a word that accurately picks out your experiences throughout the day, whether you're in the traffic, making your way across town, maybe family members, friends, lovers in your life, where you demonstrate clearly a high level of empathy and you are an empath and you're on the spectrum towards the end where you are emotionally drained because you are able to perceive from their perspective what it is that they're going through. And maybe this leaves you feeling completely anxious and also guilt in relation to their fate. Is that the kind of experience you have? And how are you dealing with it? If you have questions, comments, or just share with us your stories as an empath, we'd love to hear from you. Give us a call on 011-883-0702. It's a non-shaming space, and Jeannie will try her best as a clinical psychologist to give you advice and help you out. Alternatively, feel free to leave us your experiences, because I know that many of you fit into this category. Maybe you normally get dismissed in all sorts of ways. Ugh, she's just a bleeding heart liberal, for example, that kind of thing. But it might be that that's not what's going on there. It's not only about values. It doesn't even have to be about that. Maybe it's because you have an incredible capacity for empathy. Leave us your stories, your experiences as well on WhatsApp on 072-702-1702. I wanted to ask you about the guilt and the anxiety. What would occasion those? So I get that on that spectrum, someone might be an empath.
Mm.
How would they develop a feeling of anxiety? Would that be because you then want to rescue the person now that you have this deep cognitive understanding of their perspective and their experience in the world?
Sometimes, but not necessarily. So you know, said how would that manifest in the high levels of empathy? If people are often telling you that you're being too sensitive, if you're overly sensitive, that can be a sign that you're a highly empathic person. And there's lots of research now into the highly sensitive person and empathy definitely being one of those characteristics. So actually, it's not that the empath feels things more deeply. Mm. It's just that the empath perceives more widely.
Okay.
So if you say the normal person's frame of reference is, let's say, a 20 centimeter, the empath will notice, you know, 120 centimeters. So an average person might not notice the nuance in your tone of voice, might not notice the flicker of your eyebrow, might not notice a subtle change in your body language, but the empath will. And then they will suffer immensely for the rest of the day thinking, is Eusebius mad at me? Was he upset? How did he feel when I said that thing? Was I ineffective? And then will overthink, and then that will create the anxiety as well. And the empath will often say, are you mad at me? Is everything okay? Are we okay? Are you okay? And that will often be actually quite irritating for the person who might not even be aware of what was going on that subconscious level, that maybe they were thinking about something else. Mm-hmm. But the empath tends to take responsibility for that. I think, what is it that I've done to make this person feel this way? And that can be quite irritating for the other person, who then responds with a bit of irritation. And then the empath says, oh, you see, it's because I'd forgotten that they like one teaspoon of sugar in their coffee instead of two. Mm. And now our whole relationship is in jeopardy.
Wow. Okay, I can see some of you calling in. We'll take your calls in a second. 011-883-0702.
702.
Family Matters.
27 minutes before noon, we're in conversation this hour with Jeannie Cavey, clinical psychologist, and we're talking about the downside to empathy. Frances, good morning. Thank you so much for calling in.
Good morning. How are you?
We're very well. Thanks for picking up the phone. Talk to us.
I am a complete empath in the sense of literally I can't walk in Mainland Mall without feeling completely drained after getting home. Mm-hmm. Just because I can observe the people around me, the emotions they feel, and sometimes I can't even identify if it's my own or someone else's until I get home and actually analyze it. So, yeah, it's draining, just as it's been said earlier. It is very draining in being an empath and even being a sympath. So, yeah, everything is just, yeah, emotional, basically.
That's a beautiful description you've given us there, Frances. It's a beautiful example of what it is like. Like you say, you sometimes can't differentiate between what you are feeling and what the other person's feeling. You so accurately perceive it on such a deep level that it can sometimes feel like your own emotional experience. And walking through a mall, there's so much going on. People's lives are going on. And you are so exposed all the time to being aware of what the other people are experiencing that when you get home, you actually have to decompress and process. What was that all about? Is this mine? Is it someone else's? And yeah, you give a beautiful description of just how draining it can be. And when we feel drained, we feel incredibly down.
Yeah, that's completely true. And the only thing is that what I tend to do is I tend to just suppress it. And then eventually I'm so emotionally overwhelmed that I actually just take a break from life here in Centurion and go to Cape Town for a week and just chill with myself.
Yeah, the problem is that especially in our country, there's so much strife, inequality, that there isn't any space really in our country where there isn't an opportunity for an empath to feel anxious and guilty. Do you ever feel guilty when you use a coping mechanism to, in your words, suppress some of that emotion? Otherwise, obviously, you don't want the emotion to debilitate you. But whatever you do, whatever you mean by suppressing it, do you ever feel guilty when you do what you need to do for yourself?
I do feel guilty, but that's mainly because the suppression of the emotions always has some sort of backfire. And usually it's my family or my friends or my boyfriend or whoever it is usually deals with the negative side of it. And because I know this happens, I tend to isolate myself for, let's say, a week so that I don't do that, so that I can properly work through stuff. But there's definitely guilt because I feel like I take my emotions out on people and they don't understand it because they aren't in that.
You've given a beautiful description there, Frances, of what I like to call the guilt resentment seesaw. So you sit with a bit of impact, something you've noticed, and then you absorb it. And then you absorb it a little bit more and you absorb and you absorb because you don't want to say something to the other person. You're sitting with so much stuff. You're not clear. Is this my stuff, your stuff? It's hard to get it out. And then so the resentment starts to build and a person starts to tick up like on a pendulum and the resentment builds and builds and builds. And then eventually when the person's at saturation point and they can't anymore, when they do set a boundary or they do say something, there's so much momentum, there's so much resentment built up behind it that they swing all the way across to the other side and set this really hectic boundary or isolate for a week or go to Cape Town or have an emotional outburst or cry. And people say, geez, you're overreacting. Where does that come from? And then the guilt kicks in again. And the person starts to tick all the way back onto the other side of the pendulum. So the guilt comes with absorbing. Absorbing too much, the resentment then builds up. And then when the person does set a boundary, they feel guilty for the boundary that they set because how must my child feel that I shouted in front of them at the guy in the traffic?
No two people are going to be the same because people's lives are differently arranged. But what are healthier ways of dealing than getting on a flight to Cape Town?
I don't think there's anything inherently unhealthy with getting on a flight to Cape Town per se. It's just
it's a beautiful city.
It's a beautiful city, and I think that some people do need alone time. I think, though, that one of the keys is setting boundaries sooner rather than later. I think that's definitely one of the keys about saying something sooner rather than later. Setting a boundary by expressing a need rather than expressing a complaint, and making sure that your isolation doesn't become addictive, because isolation and anxiety go hand in hand. So we all need alone time. We all need to decompress. We all need to just breathe for a moment and, you know, just shuffle off the day. But when that isolation goes on for a long time, we actually don't want to connect with people again because isolation is so addictive, then it can lead to further anxiety and the solution becomes the problem. So a more effective way of dealing with your empathy is really looking at how you set boundaries, looking at where your locus of responsibility is and learning how to set boundaries in an effective way. And part of that is timing to do it sooner rather than later.
Visit hatfieldgroup.co.za for more.
702.
Family Matters.
20 minutes before noon, we're talking about the downside to empathy. A complex but a very important conversation. This courtesy clinical psychologist Jeannie Cavey, who's with us until noon. Jabu, good morning.
Good morning, Mr. How are you?
We well. Thanks for calling in.
No, I'm good, man. Look, I just want to share something with regards to this empathy and sympathy. And a lot of people, they tend to misunderstand the truth because I'm one person, I always empathize with people. I've learned to empathize to an extent that I believe it's working for me. But then now, the downside of it, the moment you empathize, people sometimes tend to think that you're selfish or you don't care about how they feel and whatnot. And the idea is not that, because I've learned that if you've got your problems, it's better for me to understand and hear your problems, but not to take your problems and make them mine. I've learned that, okay, fine, I can talk to you and advise you wherever I can, but the least I could do, I will not get involved personally in your own problems, because as soon as I start getting involved too much, it becomes personal, and that means I'm sympathizing with you. I'm sympathizing with you only to find that at some point it becomes a bit toxic, because not one or I can't maybe give an honest opinion, because now I'll be too much involved emotionally in that particular aspect of decision or whatever you're coming or whatever problem you are facing at that time. But when I'm empathetic about it, at least I'm able to think logically whilst understanding the story. So I really don't understand why is it becoming a complex matter to people not to understand when people are empathizing with them whilst they prefer people to sympathize with them.
You know, Chabu, firstly, I mean, absolutely brilliant. I can listen to you the whole day.
Beautiful.
Secondly, also, I hope Jeannie is a lecturer, because I think Jabu's distinction conceptually between empathy and sympathy is absolutely brilliant. I mean,
He's nailed it. A plus for you.
But no, the problem, I want to ask you this, Jabu, are you worried that because you've put up those boundaries that Jeannie's talking about, and because people know that you can empathize, but you are careful about sympathy overrunning, do people think you're an arsehole?
Yeah, in most cases, because they'll be afraid maybe to talk to you, even if you're talking about a serious matter. They know if you're going to address it, you're just going to say it bluntly as it is. Because now, you're not going to shy away from whatever the problem is.
I totally hear you.
Because why? You're taking the emotion cut away from the situation.
That is really, really interesting. Jeannie, what do you make of what Jabu is saying?
First of all, I want to just say I'm surprised you can say that word on the radio. I didn't know. I nearly fell off my chair there. But so I was quite delighted by that. I want to just say that, Jabu, you've got such a beautiful way of putting your ideas forward, and you obviously have really understood. I think that what's key there is to understand that empathy is one leg of a tripod of emotional closeness, the other two legs being unconditional positive regard and congruence. So if a person has empathy, accurate empathy, and they've got congruence, so say what you mean what you say, but they don't have unconditional positive regard and tend to be quite judgmental, then they can come across as a not very nice person.
Yeah.
So it's not the same as saying to somebody, listen here, don't make your problems mine, but reflecting to them, okay, this is what I hear you are going through. This is, I can hear what the elements of your problem are. That's accurate empathy. And supporting that person in their own problem solving. And so instead of giving advice and input, you might say to a person, well, what are your options? Mm. What are the pros and cons of each of those options? I was exposed to a beautiful phrase over the weekend of an energy vampire. And so this is on the other side, an energy vampire, somebody that just steals your energy. So I think that Jabu, sometimes what happens is that when you do set effective boundaries, not everybody is going to like it. And especially if you're somebody that's been overly empathic and overly accommodating in the past, suddenly when you do start setting boundaries, people are going to feel a little bit shortchanged. And why are you suddenly changing the rules of the game? So to be handled with a lot of tact, a lot of delicacy, and slowly, and also with the two supporting variables of congruence, saying what you mean and meaning what you say, and unconditional positive regard, so being non-judgmental. And part of that is about giving the other person the respect that they can solve their own problems, maybe with your support, but without you having to take that power away from them to solve it for them. And in the famous words of Dr. Seuss about that is, be who you are and say how you feel, because those who mind don't matter, and those who matter won't mind. So not everybody is going to like that their, you know, energy vampire shop is closed and they can't come to you anymore to take from you.
Absolutely.
And without giving back in, without meeting your needs in return. And they will be frustrated and angry and try and guilt trip you, which is, as an empath, you're prone to anyway. But it's about being very clear with yourself. Have I been empathic? Which is not taking responsibility for the other person, not allowing it to translate into sympathy. Have I have been unconditionally positively regarding, have I been non-judgmental, and have I been congruent? Have I been clear and visible about what my needs and my capacities are, and not overextending my capacity and not diminishing my own need? And then if the person doesn't like that, and you can say on my side of the streets it's effective, then they perhaps are potentially an energy vampire, and perhaps they should go to another store, and you don't have to feel guilty about that.
Pakama, good morning.
Hello, how are you?
Very well, thanks for holding on.
I'm good, thank you. I'd just like to really comment on being an empath. I'm so bad. It's really difficult because you take everybody's energy. You by the time you get home, you're exhausted. And sometimes you actually can't get away from feeling all of those emotions. Even if you're in a relationship, you feel the things that the other person is not saying. And it becomes really difficult maybe putting the boundaries that you're specifying about. I don't know how maybe you could just advise me of how maybe I could just work on putting those specific boundaries.
That's a beautiful question, Pakama. You, again, beautifully describe what the subjective experience of the empath is, taking it on. And I love what you said, that you can feel everything the other person isn't saying. And that brings me to a beautiful point of the difference between intention and impact. So in communication, there are always two levels. There's the level of intention, which is what happens inside a person's mind, and there's the level of impact, which is what happens within their relationship and the results of their behavior. So for example, I might intend to get in my car and go to the shop and buy a chocolate, but I knock over the poor man selling newspapers and I kill him. And I get out the car and I say to him, "Oh, I'm so sorry, I didn't intend to kill you. I actually just intended to buy a chocolate." Is he going to jump up and be alive and say, "No, don't worry about it, then I won't die, because it wasn't your intention"? Of course not. My impact is actually much more important than my intention. Even what happens to me, whether I go to jail because of that or I don't, will only be as effective as how I can effectively convey to the police what my intention was. My impact on the police will be whether they believe my intention or don't believe my intention. So impact is a lot more important than intention. And what empaths tend to do is they tend to punctuate on the intention of the other person. So, "Oh, I'm sure so-and-so didn't mean to be so awful to me today. I think that they're just having a very rough time." Mm. Or, "I know my boss is under a lot of pressure, so that's why she forgot to pay me." Or, I know that my boyfriend had a very difficult upbringing. That's why he likes to cheat on me." And then it makes it very difficult for that person to say, "Okay, this is where I need to be setting that boundary." And the result can be a lot of codependence. And codependence is when you take responsibility for somebody else's need and you don't take any, and you don't limit your capacity at all, whereas you want to move towards an interdependent relationship. And the rule in the interdependent relationship is, I am responsible to appeal to you for my needs to be met, and you are responsible for managing your capacity about that. So when you feel that the other person doesn't have capacity to meet your need, it's up to them to express that instead of you to preempt that and to offer either a reduction of your need or an increase in their capacity. And it's the other way around. So the other person, they say, "Okay, I am responsible to express my needs to you, and I am responsible for managing my capacity in meeting your needs." So it's moving away from that codependent of, "I'm responsible for your needs and I have limitless capacity and I don't have needs," to a more interdependent, where we're each responsible to appeal to the other for our needs to be met and each responsible for managing our own capacity, with a focus on impact rather than intention.
702
Family Matters.
Craig, thank you so much for holding on. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, hey, how's it, guys? My daughter made it out, but I really hope I get an answer to this question before it does. I find myself tearing up whenever I see suffering. But when I reflect upon it, it's me thinking how I would feel if I was in that person's situation. Mm. So my question is, what is the difference between empathy and just extreme forms of self-centeredness? Does that make sense?
That's actually a beautiful punctuation there. So I think, Craig, it's a subtle but significant difference of whether how you would feel. Obviously, you relate to the other person as a human being. But if you see somebody suffering on the side of the road, of course you relate to that because of your own lived frame of reference. That's the only frame of reference that you have. But the difference between sympathy and empathy, for example, if a client comes to me and she says to me she had a termination of a pregnancy, and I reply with, "Oh my goodness, you must be devastated. You must be racked with guilt. You must be not sleeping at night." I might be accurate because that's how I would feel in that situation. I might be accurate. But if I wait and I listen to her and she says to me, and I just feel so relieved that the situation is behind me and I'm feeling so much better now, then accurate empathy would be for me to say, okay, I hear you feel very relieved. So of course, empathy is actually a hypothesis based on our own frame of reference of what we've been exposed to. So we can't imagine something that isn't in our frame of reference. Hmm. I don't know if you know about this, but when Christopher Columbus's ships approached the West Indies, the Native Americans there could not actually see the ships even when they were with invisible distance because they had no frame of reference for it. Yeah. Yeah. It's only when the shaman stood on the shore and he meditated and he opened up his subconscious that he could then allow himself to see the ships and tell others about it. So of course you can't see ships that you've never had a frame of reference for. You might never have been a homeless person, so that you can only imagine what you would feel like as that homeless person. But let's say you have a discussion with a homeless person and they say, you know, it's actually quite liberating. You know, I don't have a bond, I don't have any debt, and you know, I grew up this way, it's all I know. And then you still, when you drive past that homeless person, say, oh, if I was that homeless person, this is how I would be feeling. That would then be more sympathy than it would be accurate empathy. So I don't think that putting yourself in that other person's position is necessarily self-centeredness. That's your frame of reference, and that's the only information you have available to you of how to make the hypothesis of empathy. Mm. But when you have further information and you continue to put yourself in that position rather than accurately, and the word is accurate perception of the other person's frame of reference, then I'd say that's more sympathy than empathy. And neither of those got anything to do with self-centeredness, but we can only have access to our own frame of reference.
Absolutely. Shane, good morning.
Hi, YouTubers. Can you hear me?
Loud and clear. Thank you so much for your patience.
Absolute pleasure. You know, this morning, if you're one of those people that I know if we had to meet would be the best of friends, because most of the time I absolutely hate you, because just as I'm grasping firmly onto the opinion I have, you take us down a different road, and I have to admit that you had me on that. And I feel so stupid sometimes for having that opinion when I listen to someone who's unbiased. Mm. And because it's in the very nature of being unbiased that one shows empathy, because you're not taking a slant on it either way.
Mm.
And this morning when you were talking about the kind of the rugby thing about, you know, how people must feel, because I'm a South African male, 49, went to the army,
mm-hmm.
and I find myself quite often going, oh, for God's sake, what are we on about now?
Yes.
And then I catch myself doing that going, hang on a minute.
Mm.
How on earth, first of all, can you say that? You have no idea what it, you cannot understand what it's like to be a slave until you are a slave.
Mm.
So, I am an empath on a level, like I've been the butt, I've played all the sports I've done, I can hang with anybody, but I have never known what to call that thing that when someone passes behind me, is 100% guaranteed I'm completely right. And I thought it and thought it and thought it. And somehow, unwittingly, I've managed to ingrain empathy into my children, even though I've realized that being away from them more is the way to get it, the message, or to teach them. I come from a background where my father, you know, hidings were regular. And I've managed to stop that curse so that my kids can talk with emotion and allow me to experience empathy, because violence or me forcing an idea on them is not part of our regime.
Absolutely.
And somehow that has managed to happen.
That's
I haven't known what to call that thing that tells me without a shadow of a doubt. I am right about. I haven't known what to call it. I now know what it is. And to be quite honest, I'm quite embarrassed to have it, to give it a name. And I've sought it out amongst what I call the cosmics, you know, the crystals and some magic oils and, you know, you'll get over it kind of people. And I find them even worse about it, because everyone's very quick to harness the notion of being an empath or a shaman. You cannot be that unless you are completely open at every minute to learning and being wrong.
That is so beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. So when I'm
to draw the boundaries of
despite your playful hatred, when am I getting my invite for a braai?
A braai.
Okay, we'll take it baby steps. Yeah, we've opened the dialogue. Maybe next time I'll get a braai invite as well.
That was a lovely boundary that you set there, Shane.
You set it. Beautiful. You practice boundary setting.
I love it. I love
Shane,
that from Shane.
I want to honor you for that call, for your vulnerability, your honesty, and even the analytic parts of reflecting on yourself.
Mm.
And it's a beautiful way to end with one final question, which probably deserves more than a minute. I like what Shane is saying in relation to his children, especially because you started off when you talked about the spectrum using musicality as an analogy. Some of us are more likely than others to end up getting our licensure to be able to perform as classical pianists because you need aptitude.
Mm.
But whatever innate aptitude you have, it still needs to be practice.
And taught. Yes.
How can I teach myself to be empathetic, even if I can't do anything about whatever my innate secret limit is? How do I know whether I've, maxed out how much empathy I might have, if I'm in short supply, for example?
I think that it's very seldom that somebody who's in short supply of empathy will themselves decide that they need more empathy, because empathy is a very uncomfortable experience.
Mm.
But if you are in a situation where you're realizing that you need more empathy, a fantastic way of doing that is to spend time around empathic people.
Okay.
Because of the process of neuroception and modeling, and it is a skill that must be taught, it is a skill that must be learned. So modeling empathy for our children, having empathy for our children, like Craig said, making a space where children can express their emotions. And if you do get into the uncomfortable position of realizing, hey, something missing from my role repertoire is empathy, fantastic way of doing that is to spend more time with empathic people and seeing how that's modeled and getting the benefit of the neuroception of your central nervous system of what is empathy on a central nervous system level.
Beautiful. What a lovely conversation.
I love it.
I just wanted to go on for another hour. Thank you, Jeannie.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for coming
on. Thanks, Eusebius.